85 degrees in Kalamazoo. Actually, 87 it's bumped up to now. Feels a little more like 91 out there. So, yeah, it's hot and steamy in Kalamazoo at 590 WKZO. And this is the Jeremy Lawrence Show. This portion of the program brought to you by Weatherstone Village. Check out their local award-winning 55 and over community at their open house every Saturday from 10 until 2. Well, another hour to chat about all sorts of things. And you know what? We got all sorts of things to chat about. Started talking a little bit about the Michigan minimum wage drive. And I know for if you're just tuning in, you're going, well, Jeremy, that was months ago. We took care of this. You know, the legislation was passed, and they raised the minimum wage. It's over. It's done. Not so fast. Here's what's happened. The coalition seeking to boost the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour ended up, according to the Elections Bureau, filing more signatures than what they needed to get on the ballot. But the Board of State Canvassers will vote later this week on whether they should certify the question for the ballot. You know, they'll look over the language and the whole bit, see if, okay, this works, all right, got signatures, okay, all right, what does this do? Well, the People Protecting Michigan Jobs have been protesting the petitions, and now they're asking the state Board of State Canvassers to reject the petitions because it allegedly nullifies a law that no longer exists since the legislature passed its own minimum wage hike. Now, you remember back when they did that and they were accused of, oh, they're sidestepping the people on this one. They're responding to the people. They passed it. Honestly, I didn't agree with them passing this thing, but they did it anyway. Now, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have. They did what they did, and that's fine. But here's what happened. If the Board of State Canvassers say yes, the issue could end up in courts. That's where it's going to get interesting. And the courts could make the final decision on whether they would let voters decide the ballot question. Now, if it goes to the ballot and voters say yes, then you've got another question. Which one of these things actually happens? Is it the petition? Or is it what the legislature passed? There's the big question. And there's what you wonder about it. Now, you know, when it comes to minimum wage, there would be people who say, well, come on, you know, it's just you're giving a boost to people on the low end. They'll have more money. They'll be able to buy things. They'll be able to, you know, we'll get more money into the system. To you, if you are saying that, I would ask this very simple question. Where does this money come from? And it's a good question because you say, well, it comes from the business, from their profits. You sure about that? Because where the money will actually come from, believe it or not, is from you and me. That's where it comes from. You say, well, wait a minute, this isn't a tax. We're telling businesses that they have to pay their people a little bit more. Okay. So, who do you think goes to businesses?
We do. Customers do.
There you
do.
Go. Yeah. I mean, how many of us can say, yep, been to McDonald's probably in the last couple of months?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yep. I'll ashamedly raise my hand there, but beyond that. Anyway. But and it's not just McDonald's. I mean, you know, any big box store that you go to, any store that you go to is going to be impacted by this. And if you take it up, and eventually the state minimum wage is going up to, I believe it's, $9.20 is what they're looking at eventually. I think it's by 2017, if memory serves. $10.10 is what it was going to do by, I think they said, what was it, 2016 or something like that. I have to look at the ballot language. I haven't in a while. Because like you, I felt like, all right, this is dead. It's over. But now we get the courts sounding off on this. Now, lest you forget, let me remind you of some stats that I shared with you before when it comes to minimum wage. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, and these are national numbers, suggests that there are about 3.6 million workers at or below minimum wage. And, of course, you can be below legally under certain conditions. That's 2.5% of all workers, 1.5% of the population of potential workers. You're seeing how small a group this is. Within that small group, 31% are teenagers, 55% are 25 years older, younger. What that leaves is about 1.1% of all workers over 25, 0.8% of all Americans over 25 earning the minimum wage. Okay, so you're probably going to say, well, how is this going to impact businesses? Well, here's the thing. You're talking about bumping the minimum wage considerably. And businesses are going to have to deal with that. And where is that going to come from? Are they going to take it out of their profits? Some might. Most will say, well, this is an added cost. And because it's an added cost of doing business and an added, you know, added labor and that sort of thing, I'm going to have to do one of two things. I'm going to have to either let go of workers to be able to meet the this, you know, to make this more affordable, or I'm going to have to raise prices on things. Now, we know, because we've talked about, you raise prices on things, guess what? That means when you and I go into Walmart and we go to buy, say, a stick of deodorant or shampoo or buns for your hot dog cookout or whatever it is, fill in the blank, a six of Oberon. How about that? There you go. If you're doing that, it's going to end up costing you more money. Now, here's the other part of it. If businesses are forced to let people go, then you got even less of these people making minimum wage actually working. Now, I know you're saying, you're looking at this and saying, but, you know, this is a done deal. The legislature signed off on this. And I agree. I think they did. I didn't agree with the move, but they signed off on it. And I think that's that. But this could end up in the courts. And if it ends up in the courts, then I guess you could just say, Houston, we have a problem. Because if it ends up at the courts, then you've got the courts sounding off saying, well, you know what? What they really wanted to do, what they really meant was this. And, you know, the group that is wanting this and wants this to be before people is defending this in court. But there are people that are against it. And you know businesses all over the place are against it. Why? Well, not because they don't want to pay their people more. It's because they don't want to have the cost of business go up. And I know, you know, you're thinking, all right, this was over and done with. But it isn't. And that's the thing. I really wish that these petition people would have been willing to sit down with the legislature and say, all right, we're willing to talk. We're willing to get this worked through. But apparently they're not.
They don't want to compromise it. They're saying it's 10-10 or nothing, really.
10-10 or nothing. Yeah. And the legislature gave most of what they wanted.
Yeah.
But no, we need that more. We need more money. All right. So we're already going to see prices go up. We're already going to see people lose their jobs. I guess they want more people to lose their job. If you do it by the numbers, that's what's going to end up happening. Because how many businesses are going to say, can't do it. I'm going to be forced to close. I'm going to be forced to reduce hours. I'm going to be forced to reduce the payroll. I'm going to force my people to work a little bit more. And let's face it, you combine this with Obamacare and suddenly you're putting employers into a tight box. Because if they have to provide for full-timers, well, then you know, there won't be as many full-timers. And if they have to pay more, well, then there's probably not going to be more people working. Am I the only one that thinks this is a problem?
No, I don't think you're the only one.
I mean, really? And to see this group, it's indicative of the same thing we suffer from, which is this. I don't think it, I think we have lost somewhere along the way the ability to talk to one another on differing sides of the viewpoint. We've lost the ability to talk to one another. Think about it. You see it on every one of the national news channels. Well, if Democrats would have done this, then we wouldn't have this problem. Well, if Republicans would have done that, well, we wouldn't have this problem. How about instead we all sit down and say, all right, you think it's an issue. Convince me. And let them try and convince people, people of different stripes. Maybe then we can come together in the middle and say, well, you know what? We can't do that. We can't do nothing. We'll meet in the middle. Now, the legislature, I think, did their work on this one. I don't necessarily agree with their outcome on this. I don't think the minimum wage should have been as high as what they got to. They did what they did. But I think they at least came together and said, all right, we'll do something. Something's better than nothing on this. We'll get it done, and then we'll move on this one. But for those that are organizing the petition drive, that's not good enough. And the sad part about it is that there are those who are using the whole petition drive just to get voters to the polls so that they can vote in other races. That's sad. That is absolutely sad that you would do something like that just to, and if they're there and they vote on this, well, they might vote for our candidates as well. You know, it comes down to the question of power and being elected and keeping your power. Why can't it come down to a question of for the good of the people of the state and of the country and of the city, etc., etc., etc.? Why can it not be as simple as all that? Am I wrong here? I think we need to be able to have something a little different than this whole flat-out desire for power. Let's keep people in power. And, oh, by the way, here's a way we can do it, and we'll use this to get people to go over here and vote for the other thing. I don't know. What do you think? 382-4280 is the local phone number if you'd like to be a part of the program today. If you want to call us and you can't do it locally, well, you can do it toll-free. How about that? 877-382-4280 is the toll-free number. You can also text us at 80373 and be a part of the discussion that way. And just basically what you do there is you share your comments, the appropriate comments we will share with people, the inappropriate comments Michael will giggle at softly to himself in the background.
All the time.
That's what that little laugh is in the background you hear occasionally. He's over there. Hey, we just had one last hour. That's all I'm saying anyway. love to have you part of the program. And you know what? As we roll along today on the program, corporal punishment, yes, spanking. That's been in the courts lately. I'm going to tell you what the courts concluded on this one. And I really want to get your input on this. What you think about it. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What goes too far? I'll tell you what the court said. We'll find out what you said as we continue along here. The Jeremy Lawrence Show at 590 WKZO, brought to you this portion of the program by Bronson. You know what? Bronson Positivity, that's the positive momentum driven by a constant pursuit of excellence. Learn more at bronsonhealth.com/quality. Jeremy Lawrence here with you, heading through your afternoon together. And this is one of those debates that has been out there for years and years and years. Spanking of children has been out there, and you've got different viewpoints on it. And I can remember that clear back in my college days, yes, eons ago. Okay, maybe not that long ago, but it's been a while, I will admit. I can remember sitting in class and having a debate on this one. And different, I'll never do it. Never. And other people, well, yeah, it's something you kind of use. Well, a New York court, it's a 4-judge panel in New York, unanimously found that a father who spanked his young son was in the right. They said it was a reasonable use of force. This was what happened after a Long Island father was brought to trial for spanking his 8-year-old. What happened in this, what his kid did, he cursed at a party at a friend's home in 2012. How this ends up getting prosecuted, I don't know, but there it is. Now, the father remained anonymous. He admitted spanking his son for cursing, but apparently the complaint said that he'd used a belt. He didn't. He said used an open hand. And the court says in their ruling, father's open-handed spanking of the child is a form of discipline after he heard the child curse at an adult was a reasonable use of force and under the circumstances presented here did not constitute excessive corporal punishment. Now, interestingly enough, and this is a story that you can find on BuzzFeed. Last year, California Appeals Court ruled a woman should not be labeled a child abuser for spanking her 12-year-old daughter with a wooden spoon. Ouch.
Oh, boy.
That'd hurt. And in Florida, they ruled one spank does not constitute domestic violence. Minnesota Supreme Court, similar ruling. Cleared a father who hit his 12-year-old son with a wooden paddle 36 times. 36 times? Wow.
What did that child do?
I don't know. I'm something close to murder, I'm assuming. But they determined that spanking isn't necessarily abusive. Now, for those that went through it as a child, and I could speak to that. It's something that I had to deal with as a kid. You know, there were some creative things that my parents did. For instance, Hot Wheels tracks. Ouch.
Ouch, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's not an... Hot Wheels tracks, I don't use that with my kids. No. No. But I think that there is something to the idea, and I think, you know, you've got this New York panel that came together on this and said reasonable use of force. It's that age-old thing, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child. And you've heard it for years. And I think, you know, look at when you see somebody in public. And I know I have been to restaurants out there. I've been there where people have their kids and they're running around the table and they're doing this and they're doing that. And they're running over here and doing this and that and the other. And they're unruly and that kind of thing. And if you're sitting near that table, as soon as they sit down, you're going, oh, boy. Oh, boy, your enjoyment just got worse. You know, you're just sitting here going, all right, enough, all right. But then you think about another table of, you know, parents sit down, the kids sit down, the whole bit. Kids are well-behaved. They sit in the seats. They eat their food, and they're very well-behaved. Ask yourself what the difference is there. Is it parents that pay attention? Table of the unruly kids, the parents are sitting here going, now don't do that, stop that, stop that, cut it out, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And I've heard it before. You know the table full of people I'm talking about. Because you've heard them before. You hear that. Stop it, stop it, stop, and it doesn't stop.
Just saying stop it is not going to stop it.
There has to be consequences. There has to be things. And I think there's a certain age where you say, all right, enough with the spanking. I don't know, 12-year-old, I think. Maybe that's a little beyond where you need to be doing it. But it comes to a decision of saying, all right, what's going to work to be able to motivate change? We all understand if you're a parent, you're in charge of discipline for your kid. And discipline means you're not turning them into a holy terror. And who wants a holy terror for a child? Michael, put your hand down. I'm kidding. He didn't have his hand up. So. But who, you know, who wants that? Who wants to be known? Oh, yeah. George's kid. Oh, don't invite George. Mm-mm. He brings his kid. Forget it. Party's over. It's spoiled after that. And you know, you've had that discussion at your house. Yeah, we're going to have friends over. We're not going to have the Johnsons over. Why? The kids. Ugh. And you know that. Or you have people over and you put up all the breakables.
Yeah.
Because you know, and that's the thing. There have been so many instances where, well, spanking, we got to challenge that in court. or other things that happen. I heard a story, I believe it was last week, where a woman who left her 11-year-old in the car long enough to go pick up something in the store is now facing a court date because she left an 11-year-old in the car for 5 minutes.
Oh, yes. I heard about this
story,
too.
Yeah, did you hear about this?
Yeah. And she had to, like, break into her car and, then get the kid out.
Well, and the police broke in, but then they, like, well, it wasn't warm in there. And, well, you know, they weren't in any danger.
I thought she locked her keys in her car, too, if I remember correctly.
Well, and that maybe was a different story, but...
Maybe.
There was an 11-year-old left in the car by request to the 11-year-old saying, Mom, I don't want to go in the store with you.
Oh, I've done that before, too. I've said, yeah, when I was younger, I don't want to go in. Just leave me in the car.
Yeah. And that happened. I mean, think about that. When you grew up, it happened all the time. There were times like, I do not want to go in the grocery. I don't want to spend 10 hours looking at Fruity Pebbles, okay?
Exactly.
I don't want to do that. You remember this, and you know what? You came out okay. Whatever happened to old-fashioned stuff, old-fashioned values? Spanking is one of those things, as long as you're not, and I think, I want to say, 36 times that's, with a wooden paddle.
That seems excessive.
That's excessive.
Yes.
All right, I would have said, yeah, all right, yeah. Five, maybe 36? Come on. But come on, we need at least a little of that. We've got to use some common sense. Where is it these days? And it is currently 87 degrees in Kalamazoo, 590 WKZO and the Jeremy Lawrence Show. Before we move on to some new topics of discussion, we did have some texts came in a little bit ago. We were talking about corporal punishment, also known as spanking. New York court has sound off saying, yep, use of reasonable force. This was in response to a case of a Long Island father who open hand spanked his 8-year-old for cursing at a friend's party. This was back in 2012 that took place. And the court unanimously agreed, yep, reasonable use of force. Spanking is allowed in that particular case. We had a couple of comments come in, and of course, if you'd like to comment on this or any topic that we talk about, 803-73 is how you do it. Well, these folks did this, and they said, one said, if more parents did, maybe less of the violence by these kids nowadays. I think they're basically saying that would lower the amount of violence you see.
Mm-hmm.
Another person says spanking is about the act, not inflicting pain. It only takes one spank. Well, it depends on the kid, really, but you know. but I get what you're saying there. I definitely get what you're saying. So, and I think that's up to the individual parent, really. If you think about that, it's up to the individual parent. And I think in a lot of cases, I mean, okay. We saw that in that story, 36 times. Yeah, that's excessive, I think.
That is definitely excessive.
And I think a lot of people listening will go, yeah, 36 times? Yeah, that probably is. So, and I think that's probably what that was all about. Now, I wanted to move on here because Time Magazine is reporting on a man that, I don't know, I hesitate to call him Mr. Frump. But he does look awfully frumpy in a suit. He does. I'm talking about former Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul. Now, Ron Paul gets support from a lot of people, and you've seen in the last two campaigns, 2008, 2012, that are more about libertarian issues and that kind of thing. He tends to be to the extreme right. And I'd say beyond that. Now, Ron Paul... I'll say this, because I had a chance to really listen to what he had to say back in the last presidential campaign, and 75% of what he has to say seems reasonable. It's the other 25% that scares the hell out of me. Now, you decide which percentage this falls into. Time Magazine reporting that Ron Paul claimed on Sunday that the U.S. and European Union may share responsibility for the downing of a Malaysia Airlines plane over Ukraine last week. You know the one we're talking about. Here's what Ron Paul is claiming. He says, Western media outlets rush to repeat government propaganda on the event. There are a few things they will not report. He wrote that on his website. They'll not report that the crisis in Ukraine started late last year when the EU and U.S. overthrew the elected Ukrainian president. And without U.S.-sponsored regime change, it's unlikely that hundreds would have been killed in the unrest that followed, nor would the Malaysian Airlines crash have happened. I'm assuming at this point that Rand Paul is going, Dad, shut up! Shut up! I want to run next time! You got to think, because and they've asked Rand Paul, all right, what do you think about this? And his office hasn't said a word. Well, he said, Dad said, I'm on vacation. Forget it.
Oh, wait, I didn't hear that. Oh, I don't want to hear it either.
Yeah, let me check up on it. I'll ask the next time that Dad and I get together. You know what? Christmas is rolling around. I'll let you know. But here he is, Ron Paul coming out. Yes, if you guessed this is part of the 25%, you have the right answer. You haven't won anything, but you've got the right answer. This is interesting that he comes out and says this. Now, he does say this, and I think there is some truth to it. He says that Ukraine separatists would have everything to lose if they shot down the plane. But I don't totally agree with that, and here's why. I think if separatists could shoot down the plane and then somehow pin it on Ukraine, suddenly their cause looks just. It looks like they're in the right here. And I think, you know, there's a lot of finger-pointing going on around about this, but here's the ultimate thing. What's Russia doing in all of this? And I think, you know, you go back to Ron Paul. A lot of what he's talked about that just drives me up a wall is all of this, well, we don't need to be involved in that. Well, we don't need to be involved in that. Well, we don't need to be involved in that led to World War II and what happened there. Germany and Japan got so huge and got too big for their britches and wanted to grow. And they started doing so militarily. What happens if America is not engaged in the world? What happens if America is not at least engaged in this and saying to Russia, no, you can't do this? And I think in some cases with this, yeah, it's separatists, but you know what? The weapons came from someplace. And I don't think the separatists were handed the weapons by Ukraine. That kind of narrows down who gave them the weapons. It wasn't us.
I'm guessing Russia did?
Could be. I don't know. Now, in Russia, you know, Putin is, he's the popular guy. Well, look at this. Look what he's doing. He's standing up for our rights. Well, you're going to feel that way, certainly. But he's giving weapons to these people, and now we've got an international problem. How many different nationalities were on this flight? That's a rhetorical question, but you get the idea. How many different countries are involved with this? And it's not just Obama going along going, well, this might be a tragedy, and we're going to look to see if there were any Americans involved. And, you know, that's what's important anyway, is that Americans are on board. If the Americans weren't on board, then forget it. We're not even going to sound off on this. This amazes me. And I think Ron Paul is using this with the idea of, you know what, we really don't need to be involved in this. We didn't need to be involved from the beginning. We didn't need to be involved in any of this. And now the interesting thing is that Ron Paul, at the end of a post that he did on this, says it's entirely possible that Russia is responsible for the crash. Clearly, Ron Paul's not running for anything ever again, because that's a major flip-flop in the same post.
Yes.
He says, you know, it could be that it's entirely possible. Of course, it's entirely possible that the Obama administration and the U.S. media has it right this time, and Russia or the separatists in eastern Ukraine either purposely or inadvertently shot down this aircraft. The real point, it's very difficult to get accurate information, so everybody engages in propaganda, and that is also true. And I think maybe that's the ultimate point here. I don't know. Now, I'm not going to say that Ron Paul saying it's our fault isn't nuts, because I think it's nuts. We were not pointing anti-aircraft guns at an airliner. And when it happened, we didn't... we did say that it was maybe a tragedy, possibly. Yeah, because our president said that. But other than that, we didn't aim a gun at it. I think, you know, Ron Paul, he's trying to make the argument that, well, we don't need to be involved in the world. But if we're not involved in the world, what if Vladimir Putin wants to rebuild the Soviet Union? What if that happens? And we're seeing indications that he kind of likes the way that worked.
If that happens, we'd be moving to another Cold War, I fear.
You would think that. And think about, just a couple of years ago, Mitt Romney talked about it in the debates, where he said, you know what? Our greatest geopolitical foe right now is Russia. And you remember Obama going, Governor, that's so 20 years ago. I mean, come on. It's not now. Cold War's over. Can we say that the Cold War is, quote-unquote, warming up again? Could possibly be. And if we're not involved in the world, what happens? What happens to all of that? And eventually, we get drawn in. It always happens. We get drawn in.
Everybody looks to us for answers to questions, for leadership. So if we're not involved, then everyone else is going to be scrambling around deciding, what are we going to do?
And we've already had examples of the what are we going to do thing, because, oh, well, let's talk with Iran and see if we can get them talked out of nuclear weapons. Yeah, that worked real well in North Korea, didn't it? Uh-huh. They've got nukes. Oh, well, you got to shut them down. Okay, well, we'll shut them down until we turn them on again secretly. This is the kind of thing that we are facing, and to me, it doesn't take foreign policy where, well, you know what, after the election takes place, we'll give you some more flexibility, and you know what, whatever, we're more worried about this over here anyway. It takes foreign policy with some backbone to be able to say, you know what, Russia, you can't be doing that. That's not right. And with this case, you can say, look, a terrorist act has taken place. It's okay. You can say it. And it has nothing to do with America. But it should have everything to do with America, the response to this. That's where I think Ron Paul is wrong on this one. Now, mind you, this is Ron Paul, as I said. Rand Paul didn't say this, and I have a feeling he's probably not going to respond to this much at all. And I don't blame him if he doesn't. These are the things that we deal with. You know, and Ron Paul coming out and say this doesn't help his son at all. This doesn't help his son at all, trying to possibly run for office. It really doesn't. Well, we're going to continue ahead talking about the news of the day. If you'd like to chime in on things, feel free to do so. 877-382-4280, 803-73 if you'd like to text us. The Jeremy Lawrence Show continues on 590 WKZO. Yep, it's 87 degrees, Kalamazoo, 590 WKZO, and the Jeremy Lawrence Show. The lighter side of the news. You know, there's lots of interesting things out there that you wouldn't hear about anywhere else, and I want to bring your attention to something that if you are a pet owner, you will want to know about. Apparently, according to a study put together by Carroll University in Wisconsin, cat people are smarter than dog people. Michael, are you a cat person or a dog person?
I'm a cat person.
You're a cat person. All right, yeah. I guess technically right now you could call me a cat person, although at one point I did have both. So I don't know if that makes me less and more intelligent at the same time or not. I don't know. The people at Carroll University haven't come up with this. They put together a study on this talking about cat owners versus dog owners. Here's what they came up with. They said that cat lovers scored higher than dog lovers on measures such as introversion, open-mindedness, and sensitivity. I suppose because cats actually look for a staff instead of you know, and you know how it is. You know, if you've got a cat, yes, you know, dogs have their people. Cat has a staff.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that wait on them. And I'll say the same thing about my own cat. Every morning she begs me for treats because why? That's what we do every morning. And yeah, I'm dumb enough to do it. So there you go.
They know the routine. They're expecting it.
They know. Now they say that dog lovers, on the other hand, just frisky little conformists looking for a good time. They're deemed more energetic and outgoing, as well as more likely to follow the rules. They're saying that, and there's an associate professor of psychology at Carroll University said, well, you know, it makes sense that a dog person is going to be more lively because they're going to want to be out there, outside, talking to people, bringing their dog. Whereas if you're more introverted and sensitive, maybe you're at home reading a book and your cat doesn't need to go outside for a walk. So you get a cat so you don't have to go outside.
I guess. That way you can stay in and read up on things and learn, and that makes you more smarter.
I guess. Now, here's the thing. If you've got a cat, particularly if you keep the cat inside, which I advocate, that cat's going to want to sneak out the door every now and again. They're going to be up by the door going, come on, I want to see what's out there.
Yeah, let me go hunting.
You know, and I don't even know. I mean, with some cats, it might not even be more about hunting and more about just, I want to claim more. I want to claim more as my domain. I am in charge, after all. And there is nothing more important than me. This is what comes out of a cat. You can see it in their eyes, you know. And I can attest to that. Anytime I try and read a book or look at my phone, the cat's in front of it. Step in front. Nope. You're going to pay attention to me now.
Yeah, you're not going to pay attention to your phone. It's kind of like in Star Trek, I remember, when Data had Spot. And mm-hmm. he tried to do work. And every time he'd jump up in front of his consoles, he couldn't do work. Oh, nope, Spot. Mm-hmm. Puts him down. He comes right back up.
Yeah. Now, the author of this piece, and this appeared in CNET a little while ago, they said to the conclusion of, well, you know, dog people like to go outside. They ask, could it be that a lot of cat lovers like to go outside but don't really like the idea of dragging a pet with them? I have to admit, having had a dog in my life and having a cat, it's a whole lot easier when you go outside not to have the dog attached to you.
You never know where the dog's going to drag you. All of a sudden, you could be just talking and whoop.
Yep.
Drags you right along, might knock you over.
Pretty much. And dogs are kind of like, you know, it doesn't matter. Oh, new people? Whoom. I just had an encounter with a neighbor's dog the other day. They were out there, the dog's minding his own business a little bit. I pull up, get out of my car, and boom, almost right there on top of me. Hey! Now, I have nothing against dogs. I had one for a while and enjoyed having him around. I have nothing against cats. I'm equal opportunity, as it were. But I think, you know what? Maybe, and they brought it up in this piece, and maybe the French poet Gerard de Nerval decided that there was a different way of doing it. He said he preferred to walk his pet lobster. He said, lobsters are tranquil, serious, and they know the secrets of the sea. Now, that's just cool right there.
That is.
Tiger baseball happening tomorrow, so not much of a show. But you know what? We'll be back at it on Thursday at 3 o'clock, so make sure you join us. Have a good one. Till then.
This is Kalamazoo's news station and Kalamazoo's home for Detroit Tiger baseball. 590 WKZO Kalamazoo.